My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Against the Storm, which is a city-building roguelite developed by Eremite Games and published by Hooded Horse for the PC in 2023.
And this is our premium episode for the month, and it's a weird game for a premium episode. It is a roguelike and a city builder. So it is systems heavy.
Heavy. So this is not going to be like generalities in story because there is not a lot of story to be found here. Instead, the first part is going to be like stuff that is broadly applicable. And the back half is going to be like the meta game progression and like specific stuff like biomes and species and things like that.
Yes. And this is a K-pick. We're in Sherpa Town. I should figure out if Sherpa is problematic.
I have no idea.
Border.
It does refer to a group of people. You know, it's Guide Town. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm referring to the Power Sauce Bar episode of The Simpsons, but like,
yeah.
That could be problematic as well. So
yeah, what we're saying when we refer to that is the idea of like climbing up Everest. The shitty white colonizer takes all the glory, but it's actually the local person who has climbed Everest and carries all the shit and does a lot of the work.
You can't do it alone.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And this is a little bit of an inversion for that because this is a roguelike that you have, you know, the requisite number of mega hours in. And I play this game a lot, I feel like. More than 20 hours, like more than we usually do for kind of a baseline, because I like it. Well, I want to talk about my journey and stuff, getting there and everything. But in terms of how far you can get, I did not get that far.
No.
This game can keep going. It is a, it's kind of like we're kind of in Age of Empires.
It's forever game territory. To give people who have like, you know, lived this a bit of a sense, like I just got to like level 9 out of 20. And I unlocked the frogs, but didn't get to play with them.
Okay.
The frogs being a DLC race. I have about like 40 hours in this ish.
Okay. I thought you were full Gary Monster Train 2 hundreds hours.
No, not hundreds hours. I had a previous save that I had put a bunch of time into, maybe like 10, 20, something like that. I restarted because I couldn't remember the early game and stuff. And the 40 hours is like, so that's the way that it goes. So it's not like I have not seen the end of this, but like the ways in which it changes are not things that would bear out, like that would, I think, overly shade or color what goes on here.
We'll talk about the way that it ramps up complexity here. I just checked, my play clock is at 27 and a half hours. And one of that might have been going and having dinner. I might have paused it and went and did something a couple times. So it's not necessarily contiguous, but we're similar spots, I feel like, not outside of the universe, the world. This would be, if we were climbing Everest and I had hired you as a guide, we would both die.
I guess. Now I'm feeling bad. I know you're joking.
You don't need to feel bad. There's just like, there is kind of, I was reading about it. So like there's an end game to this. Like there's a thing you can do.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that is beyond the reach of this show. And if you're listening, beyond the reach of what you need to enjoy this. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
This is a great game for play this as long as it's fun. Because if you just keep going, the ways in which it expands are semi-samey. Like, well, we'll get to it. And again, I'm not coming to that from a damning perspective at all.
It's
the nature of the genre.
Yeah. No, yeah. I cut off specifically because of time more than anything. Yeah. And I would absolutely, you know, love to keep going. That's why I brought this, because I love City Builders. Into it. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I love City Builders. And I wanted to bring one, but also whenever I have a pick, I try to be a little bit mindful of not giving you full blast sicko shit. Like, I could have done Workers and Resources, Soviet Republic or something, just like fucking kill shot.
I on the other hand, don't consider those kind of things. I've been trying to come up with a perfect kill shot, but you're too resilient.
I'm too agreeable. Have you considered a good natured doormat?
Just kind of like, this is fine. I feel nothing about this. Fuck.
But I figured you would get something out of this. And also, like, I don't know of anything else like this. This hits a lot of my... It's a survival city builder, so it is like similar enough to Frostpunk, which is still king of the genre to me. While not being something that is like so similar, but I think more rigorous, Farthest Frontier than this, right? Like Farthest Frontier, that is like really logistics focused, and this kind of elides that in favor of something that is, to my experience and my knowledge of like the stuff that's out there, purely novel.
It's really a smart mashup. It does a neat thing. It took me a longer than most games I like to get this, and not get it like to do well at it, but to get why I wanted to do well at it. And we'll talk about that when we get into it. It's been an interesting journey for me. Like, I'm firmly in camp against the storm. It was touch and go there for a little bit. In this game, you play as a specific character. You're the viceroy, and you're under the command of the Scorched Queen. And you have to set up a series of colonies to explore and exploit the wilds around the Scorched City to gather resources to prepare for something called the Blightstorm.
Yes. Verbs. Nouns. Sorry, it's the smoldering city. The queen is scorched. The city is smoldering.
The storm is blighted.
People who love the aesthetics of this and dig like the world building stuff, I have a small little section for that later talking about how this presents. But we can talk about that now too, just in the first impressions that it makes. All of this is wireframe to me. The way this looks is World of Warcraft coded as hell to me.
Warcraft 3 almost actionably. Painfully so. And it's really generic. I remember us talking about this and you mentioning you were turned off by the aesthetics of this game. And like, I get it. Like, it just doesn't look like anything.
So that was a little bit of a hurdle. It's not specifically invested in making you think like all this is, you know, cool and interesting, but like the eternal struggle of the fish people against the burning city, I'm not especially interested in that. And outside of it gives you cool choices to make when you're clearing glades and stuff.
This Blightstorm happens every few decades. And when it comes, the cycle begins anew. It tears away all your cities, and everyone comes and goes and hunkers down in the smoldering city. And you have to start building again. The people in the city are stuck in this cycle. You know, they have to do these supplies to weather the storm. And when the Blightstorm comes, it replenishes nature as well.
Which is important because, you know, you're not the only viceroy out there, you know, going and doing this. You're going out and plundering as much as you can.
You are a clear-cutting monster. Like, you play this game as a Captain Planet villain, like basically explicitly, and you manage the Captain Planet villain meters.
While you're doing this, you're trying to keep your citizens/workers happy, and you are exploring this forest. Kind of the broad thing you're doing, you have a reputation bar for each individual like round of this that needs to max out before the impatience bar for the queen maxes out.
And once you get there, it's your cue. You can move on to a new city and keep pushing further into the wilderness. As you go. We're going to talk about the specifics, but we'll get development out of the way now. Tell me about Aramite.
Yeah, so this is a small studio, 6 core developers based out of Poland. Each of them is a relative novice, at least according to their Mobi Games listing. They have one game that they shipped before that they worked on like after hours from other jobs. This game that I can find nothing about, a strategy game for mobile called Shattered Plane. They put that out in 2018. And they started developing Against the Storm in, they released, Against the Storm in 2021 into early access, doing a lot of the development in the open. And it finally hit 1.0 release in 2023.
Yeah. There aren't a whole lot of development details because this is a small game, small team. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an interview on gamedeveloper.com and PC Games Insider. Kind of learning a little bit about this.
Yeah.
When the studio came together, they wanted to make an RPG in a quirky world, like we all do, but decided that was out of their reach. But they had made strategy games before. Mm-hmm. So what if we took our quirky world and put a strategy game in it?
Yeah. You say the, like you want to, like everybody wants to. They say that almost explicitly in the interview. It's very funny. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, like any studio, we want to sit down and make a, you know, make a big RPG in a quirky world.
The phrasing is very funny. They're you know, it's, they're from Poland. It's not, you know, but just using quirky that has connotations, you know, world building is fun. Everybody has a world in them that they want to make, but just quirky. Mm-hmm. I always think of quirky as derogatory. It's like how your aunt describes your taste in music.
Right.
And then like gets you a Bloodhound Gang CD.
Interesting.
Like quirky music.
Yeah. So they were thinking about city builders, you know, and strategy games and stuff like that. And they decided that the part about those games that they liked the most was the early game, you know, where you're looking at the conditions in front of you and doing your planning, right? They felt that once you reached stability, the best that a game could do was try and knock you out of it. And that wasn't the thing that they found interesting. And that is something that they kind of backed them diagonally into a roguelike thing, where a roguelike structure would allow them to get that repetition over and over again with different, different kind of challenges each time.
Think about the arc of playing SimCity and how eventually there's nothing to do but micro optimizations, and you have a disaster button.
Yes.
You know, you can press a button to make Godzilla attack, and you do that because there's nothing else to do.
Right.
You know, the original core concept had the city as a player avatar with like a health bar and XP. I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
I understand why they didn't go with that direction and charting new ground, but like, interesting. I can see a game taking that and running with it.
You kind of get that with the reputation and the impatience a little bit. Like, this is bar management. a lot of this game's going to come down to.
This is meter. This is a meter manager.
Yes.
You are managing meters. There's genres of games, like whole genres of games that kind of boil down to reigns a little bit. The game reigns as like the simplest version of this. And when we talked about earlier, we'll talk about this more, but talked about how the complexity scales up. That is how it scales up.
Yes.
Is more bars to manage. You're not really getting new verbs in this.
No.
It will present something as a new verb. Every verb boils down to managing a meter.
Yes.
The risk reward of this optimization, which fills this good meter and keeps this bad meter down. But if I do this other thing that lets me do this, the bad meter will go up. So what do I do to keep that down? It's all the final courtroom scene of Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's all the positive void or negative void coefficient.
Yes. It is the salt water and the fresh water in Pinchy's tank, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that is really cool. I think I'm a little bit more turned on by meter tenders than you are. Mm-hmm. But what that does is it puts everything in the kind of this integrated kind of setup where everything is pushing and pulling and you are forced to make choices, you know, between them, right?
Yes.
Based on immediate needs and long-term plans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest difficulty for them was creating this kind of diversity experience for the player. So they use this roguelike structure. A bunch of stuff can happen, and there's a bunch of ways to meet the challenges. We'll talk about that when we get to the specifics. But the thing that's neat about this is the random element means you won't always have the same method of filling up that bar.
Like every time. You can't strictly be complacent. You need to internalize a lot to figure out circular ways to get where you need to go.
Yes.
Yeah. Their devlogs are interesting. They're really well put together, just in their Steam updates. They talked about like examining other roguelites and trying to pull influences away from them. Like, hey, this is how we want to bring this aspect of planning from Slay the Spire. This is how we want to bring, you know, rewarding choices kind of from these different games. Synergies from Isaac, right? And ways that they, you know, tried to approach that. They don't reach anything as close to as, you know, as something as swingy as a synergy from Isaac. But you can kind of see it, right? You get lucky on draws. Yeah.
You can see, you know, there is that element of luck. The progression in this game, I think the meta progression is painfully slow.
It's nothing but 2%, 1% improvements. Yeah.
Well, and you get one, I played on the started on easy, then moved on to the default. Or the second difficulty level.
Yeah, you
moved
on Pioneer.
Just did the third difficulty level at the end of like my play, right? Mm-hmm. Like I may have a village that's halfway done now that's on that as we speak. You gain upgrades one at a time per village. Mm-hmm. The villages take a while.
Yes,
you know, about 2 hours. It can be quite a bit. Like this is a that long roguelike we talked about, the long roguelike structure, the difference between say like a Darkest Dungeon 1 and Darkest Dungeon 2, how a Darkest Dungeon 2 run is like 4 hours.
Yeah.
This is kind of like that. Yes. And an actual cycle, which would be the thing that is closest, you know, most analogous to a full run in another roguelike, took, you know, I finished one of those during my 27 hours of this.
I've done like 2.5, 3, something like that. I'm going for a silver seal.
Yeah. The first one is bronze.
Mm-hmm. Bronze, but I don't lead, know how they silver. Scale. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a platinum one. That's the end game kind of thing that you can get.
Yeah.
So there are even further seals that we've never even known of. We'll talk about that as well. The seal mechanic just being folded into the same thing as everything.
Yeah.
I found powerfully disappointing. Getting to a seal and not having it really change up the gameplay mode bummed me out.
Yeah.
You know, there is an element of this game where there's a purity to it where it's all going to be meters, you know, and the idea that nothing changes other than adding more meters to consider. That's like the only thing it does. Not a huge problem or anything like that. It's just, you have to acclimate. I had to acclimate to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this got a lot of buzz in early access, and then it released to critical acclaim. Like people really, really enjoy this. When we announced it, like, you know, fans said, oh yeah, this thing completely ate me up, when I played this on launch. I didn't really hear about it in early access until shortly before it was released.
It's a big time, turns hours in front of you into hours behind you.
Yes.
Game. Yeah. There are two expansions. Keepers of the Stone and Night Watchers. That is content that is integrated into the main game. It's not like you go to a new zone. But some of it is more advanced than we got to. You'd mentioned, and it's mostly like new races.
Yeah.
And stuff. New races, new events, new biomes.
Yeah.
I saw some of that. I didn't see all of it in my 27 hours. I got the foxes. I think the foxes are in the base game.
Foxes are the last base game species. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the last thing I unlocked. I have not found frogs.
Yeah. Yeah. Haven't fucked around with frogs, but I have done all the new biomes, which I think is like the meatiest thing. And like the reason I'm glad I was like, yeah, let's get that. Not just because they're out and available and I was going to get them anyway, but also,
More to talk about.
More to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the basics of the city building kind of thing.
Real quick. I mean, we talked about aesthetics and story and stuff, which is kind of bullshit. I like the music of this game. I just want to throw that.
The music of this is really good. And the sound design is great.
It's really good. The crack of thunder before the storm, as a little Pavlovian prep. Thing, and not the big storm, not the blight storm. There's also a storm every year inside your colonies that you're preparing for each year. That's great. Really, really good sound design, and just the satisfying chip, 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 chop, chip, chop of like wood, things like that. Really nice.
It's a really good, like, lightweight part of the interface too, because like the interface in this is really overwhelming.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's a version of this on Switch. I tried to play this on my Steam Deck as well, and you have to use the fake mouse.
Oh no.
On Steam Deck to make it work. And I get it, because this would not like this is too complicated for anything other than mouse and keyboard, I think.
Yeah. But like the sound design, like specifically for like when certain things, you know, when things are ready for your attention, it's really good and subtle too. Like that, you know, a little indicator light can change and I will never see it, but I would hear that and I would think, orders are ready. Yeah.
Yep. They also do the thing that I love, which is adding an element to the music when something bad is happening. Mm-hmm. You know, when resolve is low for one of your races and they're maybe going to abandon this, like violin. Mm-hmm. This like low violin gets added to the mix.
Yeah.
Really great sound design. Mm-hmm. Really great music.
Yeah. So let's kind of start zoomed in on like the city building basics and then kind of work out to the metagame, which will be in the kind of the post in the premium section, I guess.
Okay.
So when you start the game, and start an individual round, you're dropped into the middle of these woods in a clearing with a hearth, which is like the center of your town. Think the generator in Frostpunk, right? Mm-hmm. This is kind of like warmth and a resting place for your villagers. There's also a warehouse, which is like your logistical hub, and you have a set of workers. And you have to start them building and clearing.
Yeah, you're stuck in kind of an island in the middle of a forest, basically an island of land. Mm-hmm. There are a number of, you start with a couple of resource gathering nodes there, mm-hmm. And you can see areas you can make your way out to. These things called glades. There are small glades, dangerous glades, and forbidden glades as you mm-hmm. go through, and they have different symbols there.
Yes.
You assign your workers to gather from nodes and start chopping wood.
Yeah.
There. This is how you start kind of gathering materials.
Yeah. And once you start getting those materials, you know, you build the buildings and then you're trying to process them. Like this entire game outside of the exploration is about understanding the production chains for the stuff that you're ultimately going to make to most effectively satisfy your villagers' needs.
Your villagers' like, needs or any number of things. Like when we talk about it having different paths and having you know, the thing that differentiates this is that like you can't just say, okay, I'm picking humans like coats. Mm-hmm. I'm going to rush coats because you might be in a biome that doesn't have the stuff to make coats. You might not get humans. You might not roll up the building that makes coats.
Yes.
You know, you have to then improvise.
Yeah.
For that. Humans, like, that is the roguelike part.
You're going to have to settle for boots, humans. Just boots.
Yeah. Just boots. And you can wear them on your chest. I don't care. Staple them to your titty. I don't give a shit.
You show up to work. I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you got time to lean, you got time to clean.
Yeah. 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 But like complex goods are also like what you humans, end up trading.
Ass, gas, or grass. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where you're going with that, bud.
Getting some ass, gas, and grass from humans.
Okay. Huh. Yeah. All right. Just in general.
I don't have a car. I'm just holding the gas in my pockets, but
okay.
I got a place for the ass and the grass. Packages. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Like, you know, multiple different successes. I refer to the villagers' needs because that's like the most easy one to say. Like you're also like, you, how much of these complex goods do you want to ship back to the Citadel? Are these for particular orders? Are you trading these to get resources, to get currency to spend on resources that you can't find at the map? Like you're always trying to improve the raw resources that you have available to you, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Looking at the villager needs, an easy one to meet is housing. Mm-hmm. So you build houses for the villagers, and you can start building roads to make travel faster between your spots. There. You're going to want to do that. They're free. Mm-hmm. One thing I will say about this game is I think that it's really bad at teaching you how to play it.
Yes.
Like exceptionally bad. Mm-hmm. If you're going to play this game, go to the wiki, which is hosted on the, Hooded Horse.
It's the publisher's website,
And there's just a beginner's guide that should have been in the game.
Yes. Yeah.
It tells you everything better than the tutorial does. The tutorial in this game is fucking long.
Yeah.
It is huge and it is unsatisfying.
Yeah.
So create roads. It's going to make a big difference and they're free.
Yeah. The logistics in this are not very complicated, but they are super important because your individual buildings can be hitting on all cylinders with the perfect workers for the situation. But you will completely fall behind and be underwater with it if you are spending a bunch of time carting shit back and forth. You want to build roads. Some of the most impactful upgrades you can get are villager travel speed. And you also want to build like sub hearths and little like sub outposts with these little warehouses to reduce travel time.
Yeah, they rest at the hearth. And the warehouses share inventory like a Resident Evil box.
Yes.
So making more warehouses, you can, we'll talk about this later. You can move buildings. You cannot move warehouses.
No.
You can destroy an old warehouse and build a new one.
Yeah.
So you can kind of leapfrog them if need be. But if you're near a bunch of resource nodes, it makes sense to at least put a warehouse there.
Yeah.
So they're not making constant trips.
My understanding is on higher difficulty levels and with certain modifiers, it is no longer perfect conservation of resources when you destroy it, and you cannot move as many buildings later on. Yeah,
it's worth pointing this out too. I played on the first two difficulty levels. There's four difficulty levels, and mm-hmm. the second one seems like it's default, but the third one introduces new mechanics. On the first two, I'm kind of just starting the third one. Haven't lost a game.
Yeah.
I don't find this game hard.
No.
I find this to be a really easy city builder. It's really weird going to this with a Frostpunk mindset, because I found Frostpunk very harsh.
Yes.
If that is something that turned you off of Frostpunk, this is, to me, a lot more forgiving.
Yeah.
Than that. I would get kind of underwater for stuff, but never in danger. Mm-hmm. I have not lost a town.
Yeah.
In this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I will on veteran if, you know, once we get up there, because that introduces a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But as is with the margins in the first two difficulty levels, I find this game really easy.
Mm-hmm.
Fun, relaxing, but easy.
Yes. And I think that is very kind of it, right? Because city builders can be a little bit of a casual genre. Right.
Yeah.
Like if you just want to have the brain scratching joy of balancing these meters, you can get it. You can still get upgrades by playing at lower difficulties until it forces you to go up. You just play for longer.
Yeah. You get them slower, which I don't love, because it mm-hmm. means that if you're playing on the first two difficulties, the drip of new abilities and new verbs is glacial.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, it makes sense. They're doing a risk reward thing. You play at higher difficulties, you get more experience. That makes a lot of intuitive sense.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like letting the player naturally move on to higher difficulties because they want the challenge would be better.
Yes.
Let the players play with the toys. Mm-hmm. You know, if they just want to play it on easy, it's not an insult to you. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. they'll find it if they want it.
Yes. Yeah. Hearths burn fuel. You do not want that to go up. You don't want the fire to go out. So you're kind of constantly trying to feed it. You don't want to feed it wood, because wood is already enough of a bottleneck.
Yeah.
Especially in some of the more advanced biomes that you end up doing.
Apparently in the high difficulty, you do want to feed it wood, like reading guides and stuff, because it's the other ones are useful for clearing events and stuff. Wood is never asked for. Traders won't buy it.
Yeah,
And you never need it for things. So eventually you want to set it to only wood. Early on, you don't want wood.
Yeah,
if
you're pressing for time. Yeah, and that it changes over a run too after you get established. Yeah. I mean, specifically like opening caches and stuff, if you're deciding to do that, you need hard shit. So either like stone or the sea marrow, like the bones that you burn. Yeah.
Yeah, scrimshaw.
To get those scrimshaw stuff. Yeah.
The hearths you have fire keepers. And the fire keepers have different benefits depending on their race. They'll help you. And you can sacrifice additional things to the hearth. It will burn a certain amount of fuel on its own. You can choose which fuel. But if you are having a problem with your resolve, you know, your village's HP is going down, you can sacrifice different fuels to it to temporarily allay that or get other benefits.
Yeah.
For this. Mm-hmm. You can turn your excess, you know, your excess stores into a short-term gain. Or short-term saving your bacon.
This is something that you really need to rely on later on, especially when we start talking about like the seasonal cycle here. Like you end up falling into these situations where you need to start favoring a particular species in order to keep them around. You need to, you know, burn, you know, not even excess, just like I need this particular benefit to survive to the next, you know, to live to see another day.
To get past the storm, basically.
Yeah.
You know, we have these three within the big cycle of the Blightstorm that takes years. Each year there are three seasons that you pass through in your little village. In this world, it's always raining. yeah. Basically. You're in the drizzle season where there's some rain. It's kind of neutral, you know? There are positive effects during this.
The forest mysteries.
Yeah. The forest mysteries. The forest is alive and doesn't like you being there, but it's also mystical. It's quirky. Mm-hmm. And the this is when the quirks are in your favor.
Yes.
This is where you plant farms, if you have that kind of biome.
Yeah.
Then you have summer, the clearance season, which is harvest. Nobody's having a bad time, but there are no effects, good or bad. And then the storm comes. You get this peal of thunder, and all the negative effects of the forest mystery come in. Traders will not visit your town, and resolve tanks.
Yes.
All of your little critters have a worse time. Depending on where they're falling from, you can either be fine and just tank this, especially on the first two difficulties, or you have to start doing things. To chill them out. And that's when you start sacrificing things to the hearth.
Yes. And the forest has this hostility level, again, because it is working against you. As that hostility level goes up, worse forest mysteries start coming into effect. So like it'll just be, you know, a general resolve hit up to like really bad stuff. Like the individual villagers will start dying. Like there'll be a chance every few seconds.
Also be a thing. These are not random.
No.
When you start a biome, it will say, here's your negative. Here's your, again, this game fucking doesn't explain this at all.
Nope.
We're weirdly making a tutorial for this game better than the devs did.
Yeah.
When you start a biome, there are little on one side of a line, on the left side of it, there'll be positive forest mysteries and the other side, negative ones. You hover over those. The positive ones are the ones we talked about during the drizzle. The negative ones will say, this happens at this level of hostility.
Yes.
The hostility is not part of the tutorial, but we'll talk about that. You can say like, oh, this is going to make all my villagers slow, or this is going to make my villagers die. This is going to make the resolve go down when the storm's happening at this level of hostility.
Yes.
This is the thing I need to watch out for if I have made the woods this mad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is a relatively quick cycle.
Yes.
You know, you're going to be, I mean, in my experience, like a round of this, you know, getting a settlement up to where I filled the reputation was probably like 6-7 years. I think the most I got was like 8, something like that.
It gets shorter as you go.
Yeah.
As you get more options. It's another reason why I think the difficulty curve of this game is a little weird because like,
right.
If you play on harder difficulties, you can get these more options, which allows you to make settlements quicker. That is the arc of the game. They want you to be able to push further out because as you do this, as you make settlements quicker and do more of these seals, these kind of boss events, you get more time between the blight storm.
Yes. Like one of the ways it gets quicker is you unlock like just buildings that you get that you don't need blueprints for. Blueprints get you. Blueprints are one of the things that will determine the way your round is going to go.
Yep. At the beginning of every settlement and once every year, you get something called a cornerstone. These are perks.
Mm-hmm.
You get a random roll up. These things. And eventually there are mechanics for re-rolling. These, you can also turn them down for money if you don't want them. And they're very important, but again, they're random at this point. So like this could be, you know, a lot of times you'll get ones that just kind of don't apply to what you're doing. Like when I'm harvesting mushrooms, I get meat with it, something like that. And it's like, well, I'm not finding a bunch of mushrooms in this biome. You know, I have to choose the right one. Sometimes with incomplete information about what you're going to find in glades and such.
Yeah.
When you get a new reputation level and at the beginning of every cycle, you also get a selection, a draft of blueprints.
Yes.
There are other ways to get them as well, but this is your main way of getting which non-standard buildings you can make.
Yeah. Also, it's not every reputation point. They get scarcer the more you go up in difficulty. And even as as you go up the bar, you start getting them pretty quick and then they dwindle off.
Yeah. There's also biomes where you cannot get them that way. Or you get them very rarely that way. Also biomes where you have to get them through trade exclusively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's neat. So like you have the ability to just have some basic buildings. You add to that as you level up. But like we're talking a really shitty like basic crafting house, a really shitty like provisioning house, like the packaging stuff up to sell. And then weak like resource gathering camps. Like you have the wood, the wood cutting, but also like a weak fishing hut, like ways to just barely get started. Anything to harvest materials better or do more advanced production, you need to get those through these drafts.
Yeah. You start with the basics of everything. It's worth noting too. So like if there are berries in your biome, you have a thing that will pick berries for it. You won't be able to pick the big berries. Big Barry, Big Barry, come to the office, please. Big Barry, Barry. You don't have the thing for big berries. You might get it. You want to choose these based on what you're going to have. But again, you're not necessarily going to know right off the bat. You're going to have small resource nodes in your first opening thing because it's baby town.
Yeah. And so like based on your knowledge of the biome that you're in, you may know this is going to be a real cooking heavy kind of area. I'm going to have everything that I need to make pies. But I don't have what I need to get up there. So like you find through kind of internalizing these production chains, you know, ways to make your picks based on what you know you're going to be able to accomplish given what's available here. And you can end up kind of like really kind of fucked if you are relying on a particular thing. Like if you never want to engage in trade, sorry, bud, sometimes you're going to have to engage in trade.
Yeah. You usually know this based on the biome.
Yes.
You know, generally. I played as a generalist for all of these playthroughs. I never just said like just trade or just growing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The other thing, there's kind of a 201 level lesson for me was realizing you don't have to pick your blueprints right away.
You can, and the
guy didn't read this until I had internalized it, but this is something that I think should be in the game. The guide on the website says, hey, wait a year.
Yeah.
Like you can just spend your first year getting food and wood.
Right.
Making sure everyone's housed. And you should, because once you reveal that first glade, you'll have a better idea of knowing what you want for that draft. It presents it as a big shiny option. You don't need to take it every time.
Yeah. Same thing with cornerstones, actually. Yep. Like it'll bug you for it, but you don't have to keep them from piling up.
Yep. It's a good idea to, and eventually on the higher difficulty levels, I never got to this, but I read about it. There are timed cornerstones. Yes. So you really shouldn't pick them until you feel like you're in a good position to possibly, or not timed cornerstone, timed,
orders, timed orders.
There we go. So you don't want to necessarily pick those until you know what you can do. Mm-hmm. So the buildings have different recipes for goods. Harvesting one resource has a chance of getting in another resource. Generally. And this is to kind of give you like examples. This is various supply chains of like wood you get from anywhere. It turns into planks. Planks are used for buildings. It's also used for, making bundles of building materials, which you might need for orders or to trade. And then you might need planks plus iron bars to make tools.
Yes.
Which you might need for something. Yeah. Berries give you dye in addition to food. Dye plus cloth can equal coat.
Yes.
You know,
dye plus reeds could equal scrolls. Yeah.
Yep. I never memorized these. You can hover over to get these. I just don't have a brain for memorizing these. And there are a lot of them. This is a psychographic thing that you have to be at least tolerant of to enjoy this game.
You have to not go to sleep immediately when you see tooltips.
It's not just tooltips. It's like a very, like when you see a billion crafting materials.
Yes.
There's a tech tree of this. It reminds me of, like, this is an interesting contrast. I really liked Subnautica. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that was frustrating to Subnautica for me is that since I don't take joy in like farming, like getting a store wasn't fun for me. Mm-hmm. Just making sure I never run out of copper was not an enjoyable activity for me. So running out of copper was a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah.
This game doesn't have that because you are at any given point, you're not trying to make everything. Mm-hmm. You're trying to make what you can make with what's at the biome at hand.
Yeah.
So you don't need to necessarily know all these things. You can be on a biome where like I might have a race that would love it if I made jerky. I can't make jerky.
Nope.
You know, not I might cards, have a but. Race. Yeah, it's not going to happen. A race that would love it if I made a monastery. I'm not really going to be able to make a monastery. And that's okay. You get around that. Like in some ways, this is a lazy person's city builder in non-derogatory because you are not forced to squirrel up and do everything.
You can't do the most efficient thing at any given opportunity, right? Like, you know, it's just not possible to have the most efficient building for making planks, the most efficient building for making bricks. You have like one or two that are really good, and you have to rely on the secondary effects. You know, the ones that are that are less efficient. That is shown by like a star rating, and that determines like how quickly something can be made, and you can like set your production allocation individually on those. You can turn stuff off and on, prioritize it based on what your plans are, right?
Yeah, things like that. And you can always kind of like move like water through it.
Yes.
You know, if I can't make this thing, but I'm going to need this thing for my goal, I might be able to trade for it, or I might be able to find caches with it, or I might be able to tear down a building in a glade and get some of this. Like, I generally liked having a little bit of everything around if I could.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just for events. For glades and orders and stuff. And then if not for trade, you know, there's a lot of improvisation in this, as opposed to like, again, I like Subnautica a lot. One of the things is you can just kind of, there's an order of operations to Subnautica.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is set. You explore this biome and then this biome and this biome, you get as much of this stuff as you can, and you just go up the tech tree.
Yeah.
It not being the same tech tree every time means that, like, for me, at least, I live in the space a little bit more. It feels like there's less a chance that an algorithm can do it. You know, like, I'm more present in this game.
Therefore, you are less of a machine inside of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a machine in this game. Like, I get to say, like, oh, I would like pipes for this. Can I get them? No. Well, fuck it. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, you're not cut off. You know, think about, I don't hate, but a game I don't like is Don't Starve. And one reason I don't like it is if you don't start out with gold in your opening biome, you kind of are just blocked on the tech tree. Like, and that sucks. Like, I just can't play the game until I go and risk my life and lose this run to go find gold. that could create a cool situation, but also, like, I'm not really playing the game at that point.
Right.
I haven't made any meta progress, not having fun.
Yeah.
You know, this, adding the roguelike structure to this, adding randomization, I think you can make an argument that Against the Storm is one of the better implementations of randomization in a roguelike because of what you get in exchange for it.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. It's really good. I like the deterministic ones, but like, just like, I give me the opportunity to sacrifice efficiency in order to get at something sideways, you know, to meet a limited need, to, you know, think like, okay, I need to do this or else these people are going to abandon me. How do I get that in a non-direct way? I like being able to improvise and adapt.
And being told you cannot make everything efficient.
Yes.
Like, beating that out of you. You know, as a thing, like, this almost feels like a game designed to kill like efficiency sickos.
Yeah.
You know, cause it's just like, I can't just like do this thing.
No,
you can't.
Yeah. Like, you're limited. Like, your buildings, like the production buildings you can have, are limited by machinery, you know, like by these cogs. You only get those in very specific things. You get them from glades. You get them from fulfilling orders. You know, individual buildings cost, you know, 3, 4, 5 of these things. Sometimes, it's a little bit like a unit cap, almost. Yeah, for buildings.
Yeah. And you can destroy a building, get all of your resources back. And you can also move buildings if you need to. You're going to have to do this because of the colonialism part of this, the fact that you are just clear-cutting stuff. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
The nodes are finite. So if you find berries, there's only so many berries. But many biomes have fertile soil, so you can make farms.
Yes. You want to get those set up early, and also the season in which you get them set up is really important. If you don't have the farm there during the drizzle, there will be no planting. You will get no food for another year. You got to be real canny with the timing. Same thing with the fishing. Like, this is like a resource node, but you can decide, like, do I want to put bait into this? Do I want to spend resources to maybe get more out of this? Do I want to pull in the nets early to get like the lump sum lottery thing? Do I want the resources now, or do I want to get more over time?
Yeah. It's also these little individual bits that you're, you know, these toggles within the building. So like, this is something I didn't mess with fishing. Like, I fished, but I did not change the toggles. I never pulled the nuts early. You don't have to, at least on the first couple difficulties. So, like, don't let it scare you off with a level of micromanagement. This is more levers you can turn to face the challenges if you want to, and you can figure out that they're there, because the game won't tell you that they're there.
No.
The game never explains bait or anything even approaching it. It's truly one of the worst taught games.
Even the wiki inside of it, right?
Yeah. You really, really mind-blowing shit.
Yeah.
I was gobsmacked when I figured out it didn't explain hostility. And like, that's a core mechanic. Like, it doesn't threaten you that much early on, but it is a core mechanic. It's your fail. Yeah. It contributes to your fail state.
Absolutely.
So hard.
Yeah. You know, and if you don't understand it, you bump up difficulty, you get further away from the city. Suddenly the storm seasons start really taking you, they start redlining you, right?
Yeah. And then you just die. Like, you don't lose anything when you die. That's worth noting. But you don't gain anything.
Yeah.
You know, you're a little further along in the grander cycle. You might not make it as far out on your expedition, but you don't like lose resources.
Right.
But like, very notably, you don't gain anything. And that's a huge time sink.
Yes. One of the major systems that's added as you level up here and go up in difficulty is Rainpunk, and then the Rainpunk technology and the corresponding corruption that comes when you use it. The rains that are coming here are weird. They are infused. Yes. The different rains have different, the rains from the different seasons have different properties and can fuel these engines that you build on the engines that you build on your production facilities in order to like maximize them.
Rainpunk.
Yes.
And come then on, this increases please. Blight rot. This only
Dragon
gets introduced.
Fall.
Yeah, exactly. Like, come on. This only gets introduced on the third difficulty level.
Yes.
Through it. And when I talked about how the game expands out in ways that are only meters, this was something that was like a not a disappointment, but just kind of like, what did I expect? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, you get to higher difficulties, you need to optimize your buildings with using Rainpunk. Yeah. Rainpunk creates blight rot. The way you deal with blight rot is with new buildings and resources, of course. It's just another meter you have to keep down.
Yeah.
You know?
But blight rot causes like pathologic type cysts to grow on different buildings. If left unchecked, they spread and they tank resolve. They tank the morale. Except for the foxes.
Yeah, yes, the foxes are into it.
Yeah. Foxes are sickos for it. Foxes actually do better with it. So like you end up like consigning them to particular districts. Yeah.
Yep. And you get rid of this through like a firefighting system. Yeah. You have a blight rot fighting building. It's just outfitting another building and doing another resource. Like, it just adds another column of crafting stuff to it. You know, like when you have these, it's neat to make it. It has the shape of a risk reward thing that's really powerful.
Yeah.
It's almost too smooth of a curve. Like doing the Rainpunk stuff, you need to do it and it is worth it. It's on the third difficulty level, at least where I was at and where I've been playing, it is easy enough to keep the blight rot down.
Yeah.
You know, for that. But it was, again, just another thing I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, it added another column that didn't touch the other columns very much. The water you can also use for other things. You can use every resource basically for events and such, which we'll talk about.
Yes. And water comes either from collectors you build, or you can find geysers that you can build extractors on to get it in a more reliable fashion at the expense of, you know, workers needed to man them.
Yep. Let's talk about workers.
Let's talk about these workers and keeping them happy because
happy you're... workers. That's from Toys, the film. Okay. That's like a Toyo emo song or something like that.
Toys, the film everybody knows.
Yeah, everybody knows Toys. I'm done apologizing for being old.
Okay. I wasn't asking you to.
I'm just saying, if you don't know Toys, get on my level. I'm not going to get on your level and know about whatever the kids are into. I don't know what modern Toys is.
I was old enough. everybody loves suits. Kids love suits.
Anyway. Suits is Toys now.
That's right, Grandpa.
Suits is Toys now. 20 and 25 and Toys are battlefields.
So you have your pops there. You have the people. You can have up to three different species in a given round. And you set out with a caravan with them. You can kind of choose. Sometimes you see who you're going to have. Sometimes you don't. You just know one of them, and then the other two they're revealed to you after you make your embarking decisions. Yeah.
The most you can ever know is two. You'll always have a mystery species.
Yes.
Coming through. Yeah. And each species have different needs and wants. You know, they assign buildings, which they'll automatically do, their tasks, and then they need to take a break, and the one unit of food, at this point. They have jobs they like, and they have food they like. And this impacts the resolve. And this is kind of a collective morale for the entirety of the species.
How are the cats doing?
Yeah.
Just generally okay. around the world? Yeah.
Yeah, just how are cats? What are the mood of cats?
Yeah. Just a small little note here. I hate that it's resolve and reputation. It really should have been morale and reputation. Shouldn't begin with RE on both of them.
No. What's supposed to represent is their willingness to stay on the frontier.
Yes.
Morale would work just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you want to keep this resolve high. We'll talk about their specific needs later, but like it generally makes sense. You want them housed. You want them to have the services that they want. They like to eat food that is not raw, like to be clothed, and they want to work jobs that they like.
Yep. I love that they when they take a break, they'll eat one complex food and do one complex need, which can include just grabbing a coat and wearing it into the ground. Like, nobody gets a coat. You wear a coat every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
A different coat.
Hey, dog, what's your skin condition that you're dissolving through these things?
What is happening? Wash yourself before your sweatshirt melt. Like, wash your ass if you must. Like, this is just going through boots and coats. It's very funny.
Yeah.
They will eat raw food, but they're not going to like it as much. And raw food is inefficient.
Yes.
Processing food makes it last longer and you get more bang for your buck. So you always want to do complex food.
Right. So you generally want to like rush to it. Everybody likes biscuits. People go crazy for them shits. So like it's not a bad idea, whatever you're doing, to have the ability to make some flour. And it's really forgiving what you can make flour out of. I think you can make flour out of like algae.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you can't make something that everybody likes, you want to just hit the middle of your curve. You know, I have these two different races. I know one thing, you know, I have three races, two of them like the same thing. I'm going to go for that.
Yeah.
Everyone else can deal until I can eventually maybe get their thing. Mm-hmm. You don't have to keep every race equally happy. When a race is happy, when they're above their threshold for this, you gain reputation, which is your score to win.
Yes.
Slowly. Well, you either get reputation in burst or this way.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get them for each race that is happy at a certain rate. So like you can have a race that's just fine and you know, two of your races are happy. It'll be faster and more efficient if everyone's happy. But again, you can't always keep everyone happy.
Mm-hmm.
If the resolve falls to negative, they'll start leaving.
Yes.
At this point, which is a problem, because workers are a resource.
They are. So like that is one of the fastest way to lose impatience, or to gain impatience rather. Villagers leave or die. The scorched queen is not happy with you.
Yes. And impatience has an interesting relationship with hostility, which we'll get into.
I love that game so much.
It's very smart. It has, I can't figure it out story-wise.
No.
And I wish the game fucking explained it. I know I'm a real, you know, broken record about that, but like, I read about that online. The game never told me this. It's a really smart change to use hostility as a resource, you know, like in board game terms or magic terms, like using your life as a resource.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tell you that these things affect each other, really. Mm-hmm. They might be a hover over tooltip somewhere, but it's key information.
It's like when you mouse over the forest hostility, it'll show you a breakdown like of all the stuff that goes in there, but there's just a category that's misc.
Yeah.
But I guess the idea of the queen is impatient, like the forest likes that the queen is impatient and like you are not doing as well at exploiting it. Maybe. I don't know what the,
it's a complicated drive for the forest. Very funny. You get new villagers and they bring some goods with them about once a year there. And, you know, since you have to feed all these mouths, it's not always a good thing. You can also drown in villagers.
Yes.
You can have more workers than you can expand reasonably and stuff like that. It's all meters to balance.
Yes. And you always want a little bit of overhead. You want people who are like standing free in order to build. Yeah.
Yep. So if villagers do leave or die, you cannot, you know, have them do stuff. You're this research, as we mentioned, a resource, as we mentioned. And that queen's impatience, which goes away if they die or leave, if that maxes out, your run is over. You get set a timer. The only reason why I know that is because I didn't buy a perk that increased that timer. My queen has never run out of patience with me.
There's so many perks. There's so many cornerstones and upgrades you can get that extend like the overtime, like the shot clock that happens when you're completely maxed out. Yeah.
The queen's going to count to five, and you can do a bunch of perks that when she gets to four, she's going to start going 4 1/4, 4.5. And you can just keep going, you know, Zeno's Paradox style.
Yeah. I only learned fractions because of my home environment.
Yeah. Because of how angry my mom was.
Yeah.
The you lower impatience by doing things the queen likes.
Yes.
What the queen likes is fulfilling orders. She'll send you orders. Also doing events in a certain way. We'll talk about events there. These orders, though, you get a draft of these. Every once in a while, you're given a draft of a couple of these, of two. Mm-hmm. And you kind of pick these based on what you can do. These can be a really wide range of things, like explore a certain number of glades, have a certain population of this race, kind of problematic, queen.
It says species, it doesn't say race.
I know, but just being like, I want to see this as an ethno state. That's gonna make the queen happy. Like, that's weird. It should be a beaver ethno state.
Yeah.
And not just my website that was the most confusing porn site of all time.
Jesus.
Or, you know, can you give me these things? Can you give me these packaged goods? Things like that.
Yes.
And you choose the one you want to do or that you can do. Because generally you want to do these. Getting their reputation up is going to give you blueprints and stuff like that. This is where we talk a little bit about hostility as a resource, because as reputation goes up, hostility goes down. An advanced strategy, something that I eventually internalized, was that you don't always want to fulfill your order until you have hostility to spend.
Right.
You're going to get a point off hostility. If your hostility is at zero, don't turn that order yet.
Your impatience, rather.
Impatience. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Do something that will increase the queen's impatience, you know, and then spend.
Yes.
The reputation. Manipulate the queen.
Mm-hmm. Tease the queen.
Kiss her neck. Flick her nipple. She's a bird.
Breathe gently.
Yeah, breathe gently. Breathe on the nape of her bird neck. She turns her head all the way around. Breathing on the back of a bird's neck for sex reasons is very funny. Just, what are you doing?
Orders are going to be like one of the big ways that you get infusions of resources, specifically like things that you can't make yourself.
Tools.
Yeah.
Like you can make tools, but it's hard. But tools, and then the doodads that allow you to make new buildings.
Villagers too. This is a good way to shore up on those if you're looking for pops. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is random. You get to choose two out of a random pool. You know, so you get to choose which ones you want. Early on the first two difficulty levels, you can basically max out your resolve or get very close just doing orders.
Yeah.
The big difference with veteran and higher is that you get fewer and fewer orders until the ultimate difficulty level, where you only get like 7.
Yeah.
So you need, you know, maybe 20 reputation points, and you can only rely on getting 7 of them from this. You have to make other things, you know, work.
Yeah. You have to get that through resolve, like, you know, keep that up so that just kind of keeps growing. Or like when you're doing events, pick options that make it so you don't get the resources, but you make the queen happy.
Yes. Yep. When you max this out, that's when you can move on. There. It's worth noting, this does contain a long-term city builder kind of in it.
You can just
keep going. It doesn't earn you experience points or anything, but if you want to, you can fully develop and fully colonize this little island.
I don't see a need. I like a long-term city builder. I like a project. No.
Well, this one, you don't necessarily run out of space. Like you would exploit the land so much that you don't have a way to grow at all. Like, you might have enough farms to feed everybody.
Everybody starves.
Yeah, everybody starves. The only reason why you would do this is to make a stronger community for trade routes.
Yeah.
Later. Like, the wealth of a community does matter for trade routes, I believe. But the fact that I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not interested in you knowing.
Yes. I would be lying if I said I needed to know it, but it would be nice.
Yeah. So let's talk about exploration here as well, because your initial clearing is really small. It's big enough for a few different buildings. You're going to want to assign woodcutters to both expand, but also cut into new glades. I like how, or, like, it is funny how you designate certain trees to be chopped.
Fuck that guy in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, okay, you get a real thick brush to like select a swath to go in, and then you go in and like subtract away from the edges. So you cut, like, you have to cut the fewest trees to get into a glade. Yeah. I really perfected that art.
It'd be really interesting to. I want to watch you play this at some point, okay. Perhaps. I don't know how that would do that because I never did that. I
stream it, yeah.
I just used it pretty sloppy because I wanted wood. You know, wood ultimately, like many of my villages, I ended with way more wood than I needed, but that was what I would often sacrifice to balance out the hostility. And that was not a viable strategy on higher difficulties.
Yeah.
You know, but it is on the first two.
Yeah, so I've got this bullet point at the end here, but my general strategy was to have two woodcutting teams when I could afford it, either in workers or in hostility, but have one that was just dedicated to cracking glades, and another that is like gathering wood and opening up building space. Expanding outward from the center and glade cracking. You know, I wanted to basically rush to get into a glade so I could always be working on one of the events inside.
It's a again, we play this in very different ways. Like the glades, I generally, you know, you can mark them, you can make the woodcutters specific. You can say, don't go into glades, you know, only hit the trees that I tell you to fuck up. I did not do dangerous glades first because they have downsides. We'll talk about this. One of the things I really like about this is the risk reward of dangerous glades. Sometimes you get into a dangerous glade at an event I would not be able to address. Yeah. And those have consequences if you don't finish them out. I always do two small glades and then do a dangerous glade.
Okay.
Get myself a little bit more established. And I generally bunched my woodcutters together and just kind of move them around the map as need be.
Oh, so just have them go in. Yeah.
Yeah. I always had two as well, except for sometimes if I had an excess of villagers, sometimes I had like five woodcutters.
Oh, God. No.
It's fine. Like I won those runs. I haven't lost a run in this.
Yeah.
You know, it's tons of woodcutters. You turn them. We'll talk about this with hostility. The trees do not like being cut.
Nope.
Through this. But the when the storm happens, you can turn off woodcutters.
Yeah, you can just have pull them all take a break. Of them.
Yeah. There's a button to do all of them. The game doesn't tell you this. I just had to hover over a random button.
Yeah.
I wonder what that does. And it tells you. But you can pull all your woodcutters and reduce that hostility during the storm. Mm-hmm. So it's getting tons. And then that on top of sacrificing tons of wood that I had access, like made my guys happy on the first two difficulty levels.
Yeah.
I was able to ride that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I only really went nuts on woodcutting when I had too many people.
Yeah.
Because people want to have something to do, even if it's not their preferred thing to do. You want to keep a couple of people around as builders, but having a job, I think, contributes to morale.
Yeah.
To resolve.
Yeah. Makes sense. And there's always something that you're working on clearing toward, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. As you cut, like even just having cutters going raises your forest hostility. This will affect resolve directly as it goes up. Like just the workers start getting wigged out because the forest just feels angry. But during the storm, it'll get those forest mysteries against you. And those can be pretty devastating as they stack up, right?
Yeah. Yep. When you open up a new glade, hostility will pop up. We'll start getting more of that. We'll talk about that. But you have to expand.
Yes.
There is somewhere, like all city builders, there is a critique of colonialism in here if you want it. Mm-hmm. The forest doesn't want us here. No. The fishmen who have adapted to the rain lands are fine. And we're going to break into their homes and kill them.
Yeah, we're going.
We're going to cut down all their trees.
We're going to rip down all of their religious artifacts and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
And repurpose them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we can repurpose their religious artifacts for our religion.
Yeah, we can pray to them in secret. Yeah.
Yeah. They were going to like unfold the Star of David into a cross.
Yeah.
You know, it's nuts. You have to do it. Like the forest doesn't like it, but if you don't do it, your characters will starve. That's what happens with colonialism.
Yes.
In the best case of it, I don't think most colonialism was, you know, like the East India Company wasn't because people would starve.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but in this case, it's, you do make everything worse than when you found it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So like this will change the order in which you expand, basically. Your glades, even the small ones, will have resource nodes. You'll sometimes find crates. But in the dangerous and forbidden ones, you get bigger stuff. You get ruined buildings, and you get like a problem that needs to be solved. Events. You need to assign scouts to like work on these.
Yes. I think these are really interesting. Mm-hmm. One of the things I like about them is that the empathetic choice, there's like mm-hmm. kind of a good choice and a bad choice. Yeah. The bad choice is easier to do resource wise and always very tempting because you're going to get a big chunk of resources.
Yes.
Like I would like to get 40 pies from defiling this temple. If you do the good one, which is usually harder, one of the interesting things they do is that sometimes, you know, it'll have a higher resource cost or a rare resource, or it will say while you're working on this, this bad thing will happen. Mm-hmm. You know, while you're doing this, everyone's going to move slower.
Yes.
You know, and doing those ends up being a way to your reputation. We talked about how your deeds can't always get you enough reputation. Mm-hmm. This is doing those things that the queen likes will give you this reputation.
Yes. Also doing things that are marked as corrupt or empathetic, any of those can affect what kind of orders or cornerstones are available later on in a particular round too. Yeah.
These are real smart. Mm-hmm. I never had one of them run out. You know, I never had time run out, but that's because I was pretty cautious around them.
Yeah.
But the consequences are telegraphed to you. It's not random. Mm-hmm. And they look bad.
At least on the first three difficulties too, like the time limit on the permanent ones is really long.
Yeah.
Like 12 minutes. And, you know, that is like a year and a half of in-game time.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have situations where I need incense. Mm-hmm. I need incense or tea for this, and I don't have incense or tea.
Yeah.
You know, but you can call in a trader, mm-hmm. things like that. We'll talk about that with trading in the back half and stuff. But you can, there's ways to get around it. Again, you get to be water in this game and kind of flow towards what you need to do.
Yeah. And even like the simpler tasks, like, you know, dealing with the caches, you know, you're making a choice. Do I open this up to take what's inside, or do I box it up and send it back to the Citadel in order to get reputation and amber, which is your fluid currency, which is less important than you think until later and when it gets really, really important.
Yeah. And the queen will like it if you do that. You know?
Yeah.
So you have these negative things, and there's a wide variety of these little community chest kind of things. Mm-hmm. When I talked about the seals, these kind of boss fights just requiring some resources, it's mm-hmm. the same thing.
Yeah.
is this, which I found a little bit disappointing. I don't know what they would have done differently.
Yeah.
But basically, when you get to a community chest or a thing like this, it's going to say, give me 20 fish and 3 tools.
Yeah.
And you get this result. Take this negative effect and give me, you know, 6 perfumes, give me 6 mm-hmm. teas, and you'll get this positive effect.
Yeah. So you spend the majority of a run sacrificing skewers and shoes to mysterious forces, and you get to the final boss fight and he wants more skewers and more shoes.
Yeah. He wants pies.
Yeah.
You know, I want all your people to have pie. Like I'm an elder god who like enjoys it when beavers eat pie. You know,
again, a subpage that porn site was so baffling.
It was baffling, but it was really, really robust. It had a lot for everyone, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's a shame it's a shame the Croatian government shut you down.
Yeah, I had to take it down. Sad. I still have all the files at home. I have like my own little like internet. I have the whole thing on a disc. Mm-hmm. I just plug in and see a bunch of beavers sitting in pies. you can. There's a wide variety of strategies that work on this, at least in lower difficulties. Mm-hmm. I took a kind of a more clear cut thing. You can also be very surgical, you know, trying to make your way from glade to glade. You get to choose which ones you do in what order. I like that you have access to a gentle small glade and a dangerous glade.
Yes,
and multiple of each from the beginning. Mm-hmm. There, and you have to kind of spy them out. You can see where the glades are, and you can see, you know, maybe I want to do this dangerous glade, but it just leads to a forbidden glade. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably not going to be up for that for my second glade. I'd rather tunnel this way.
Yeah.
You know, you can make decisions like that.
Get a couple different directions you can go.
God,
it's a really smartly designed game, Gary.
It's neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's within the bounding box of what it can do. It does mm-hmm. it great.
Yeah.
You know, like it's all meters. It's all filling up. I need this many resources for this thing.
Yeah.
Like it is all variations of that, but it is a smarter variation of that than I think a lot of these are.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting to contrast this again with Frostpunk. The way that Frostpunk took care of that, I think, and made that interesting was adding a moral valence to it.
Yeah.
This doesn't do that.
No.
I could not give less of a shit about anything that's happening in this world.
No.
Instead, it does a mechanical valence through not giving you every option.
Right.
And I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to kind of hit before we break for the generals, break for the public, and then go into the premium set?
No, I don't think so. I think we got it. I think this game is cool. You will know yourself whether this is your thing. Like, you do have to have a tolerance for crafting.
Yeah.
Like, a 2x beep plus 3x pimpy equal doughboy. You have to not be turned off by seeing that.
Right.
You know? But know that in terms of, as somebody who is not turned on explicitly by that, like, that doesn't do anything for me, there is more to offer in this.
Yeah.
And it can melt hours. Like, you can just lose time to it in a way that is kind of surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ways in which I wish this was better are just ways that I wish it was a different kind of city builder or a different kind of strategy game, right? Like, I have Anno for like the logistics focused version of this, or the Survive in the Aftermath, right? Like, there are any number of things that can that get more granular on that level that would not play well with the roguelike side of this.
Yeah. It's doing something more mechanical than that. Like, we talked about you cannot be turned into a machine. And that's the way you can in my reference is SimCity because I'm an old head, but like the way you can in that. There's a proper and optimal thing to do in SimCity based on your map. It is deterministic in a way. Like you get to determine that and you can be mildly expressive, but there is a right answer.
Mm-hmm.
This game sidesteps that. Like if you want that right answer, it exists. You can play that in cozy or stressful versions. You know, there are cozy city builders that do this. There's ones that add other systems like to it, like combat and shit like that.
Yeah.
This is the one that adding a roguelike, it's almost like a city builder with added combat, except they added roguelike elements instead.
Yes.
As a complicating factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're hearing this is the public episode, and things end here for you. Very unfortunate.
Yeah. Ghost.
We'll do the admin here for you. Do we have we don't do highlighted projects on these.
Nope, and we don't have one.
If you have thoughts about this month's games, it is too late, but if you have thoughts about October's games, our horror month, those games being Mouthwashing, the Silent Hill 2 remake, Cryptmaster. Yep. Is that the Cryptmaster? And Fear 1, write in by October the 15th at duckfeed.tv/contact. If you have thoughts about multiple games, separate them into multiple responses. And we prefer responses that are specific and concise.
Yep. If you ever want to sponsor a game, we are booking into next year, just FYI. But you can do so. If you ever have a question about that, like you want to see if there's something that we would cover, send me an email. My email is always open, gary@duckfeed.tv. I've gone off social media, so you can email me if you need me for stuff like this. The other thing you can do, leave us a range of reviews. If you want to hear the rest of this episode, go to Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You get all of our premium episodes, the Fear episode next month, all of our bangers. We think it's a really good deal, $1.25 a week. You know, not here to tell you what that's worth to you, but I'll tell you one thing, it's worth less and less. with inflation, we haven't adjusted our $1.25 a week for Patreon to inflation.
Remaining
one of the best deals in podcasting.
Yep.
Yeah, I can no longer buy any real amount of food with that.
Right.
You can buy a week of shows.
Yeah, you can buy most of a 20-ounce bottle of Diet Coke.
Yes, but not an entire bottle, and maybe like a diet, maybe a bottle of like Diet Sam's Club or something. Diet Sam's Choice.
Diet Sam's Brown. Fizzy Brown Sam's, Sam.
Sam Brown. Diet Brown Sam.
Sam Brown from Whitest Kids You Know.
Yes. Yeah. You cannot, but we think it's a good value. And even if you're, you don't want to listen to the premium stuff, it's what keeps us going.
Yes.
This is our job. We would not be able to do as many shows or do them as well if we had other jobs, if we couldn't do this. So if you like the stuff, you can make sure it keeps going.
Yeah.
Also throwing out there, you know, ratings, reviews and everything like that. Those help in ill-defined ways. Yeah. If you like the stuff we do, let us know in that kind of stuff and drown out people who are yelling at us for things that have nothing to do with our work.
Yeah.
You know, there are transphobes and assholes and stuff and people who try to tank our ratings, but it has nothing to do with whether they like us. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't feel bad if somebody's like, I don't like this show. Here's why. That happens sometimes.
Yeah. You know,
we're not perfect. It's a lot rarer than somebody who's just like lashing out to hurt for no real good reason.
Yeah, yeah. Go out there and frustrate somebody who calls me the F slur.
Yeah. Like, you don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, and you can, and don't do it if you don't like the show, but if you like the show,
yeah.
You know, make it known. It costs you nothing.
You can leave comments on individual like episodes on Spotify, which is a way more people are listening to the show. I think Spotify is a repugnant company, controversy acknowledged, but if the space is there, we're going to be there, baby.
Yeah, people want it.
Yeah, people want it
on Spotify.
So if you're clamoring for Spotify, leave comments on individual episodes, please.
Yeah, do all those things. We'd appreciate it. And we'll see you next week with the Dispatch, where we talk about what we're going to do in November. Mm-hmm. And discuss topics and stuff. And finally, big thanks to Gwen, our producer.
Yeah, big thanks to Gwen.